Hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 76. We have our good friend Jeremy on the podcast this time, talking about Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Before we get into all that, though, I want to remind you to head over to iTunes and give us a rating. 5 stars would be preferred, but, you know, if you just make it over there, we really appreciate it. We would love it if you gave us a review. That would be really helpful, but at the very least, click that 5-star button, and that'd be fantastic for us. If you haven't done so already, you can follow us on Twitter at the number 3 drinks in pod, and you can also find us on Instagram at 3 drinks in podcast, and you can email us 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com if you're so inclined. And of course, the website is 3drinksinpodcast.com. I think that's just about everything. We want to thank Jeremy for appearing on the podcast. We had a lot of fun. We also want to offer our condolences to the Star Wars fan world and to the family of Carrie Fisher, and of course to her mother, who was lost both within a couple days of each other. So that was sad news to end the year out, but we're thankful for, you know, making it through 2016, and we're hoping that things look a little brighter in 2017. I guess that's it. Hit it, boys.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
The Star Wars Holiday Special.
So what are you guys drinking this evening? Anything?
Oh, we started. Yeah.
So we do. We ease you into it.
Yeah, nice. Good. I just cracked open a River Horse Special American Amber Ale. Not so bad.
River Horse?
Yeah, pretty good.
Nice. I have the Captain Lawrence Brewing Company Palette Shifter Imperial IPA, which clocks in at a whopping 9.0 ABV.
Yeah, Vince will be down in about 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm going to have just the one and then maybe find a soda or something.
Yeah, make your good points early so you don't, like, degenerate into nonsense.
So this movie was, no.
Actually, you know what? That could be fun. I want to hear that. So let's do that, whatever that was.
We did one a while back. We were talking about, like, Star Trek Enterprise, and I was drinking gin and tonics by myself in my apartment. And by about minute 27, I was basically incoherent. And we actually had to do that one again. We were like, something was wrong with the audio to boot. And you're like, oh, that's fine, because you didn't make any sense after a while.
Dana, yeah, I love you. Oh, my God. Yeah. You're like, honestly, you're like my favorite. So
anyway, but so, yeah. Phil, you have anything?
I'm drinking Dr. Pepper because I drank my face off last night instead.
And what were you drinking
last night? Yeah, right.
I was drinking Stella's, and then I was drinking Fireballs, and then I was drinking some sort of gin, so...
Where'd you go last night?
The bar. It was a Wednesday, so...
I was going to say, all right, midweek romp, I love it.
Yeah. Apparently I can't do that like I used to, though, so... Because I wanted to be run over by a train this morning just to end it all. It's the worst.
Oh, yeah, no, that's... Oof. I find that I think I had, was it two days ago? I can't remember. I had one cocktail, and it was a strong one. It was a Negroni, and those will really kick your ass. I had one of them, and I was like, oh, my God. If I wanted to be, I could be wasted in 3 seconds just by just focusing on how drunk I am right now. One drink. So... Out of practice, but so guess who died? I don't know if you guys heard, because that's like a thing this year. Is everyone dying?
Do we say like spoiler alert beforehand, or is this like actually died?
No, they're already dead. Okay, no, okay. Debbie Reynolds died.
Yeah,
yeah,
like saw that
the day after her mother. I thought her daughter. That was amazing. So this is the memoriam version. Of of the podcast for Carrie Fisher. So that was very sad. Died from a chronic case of being Carrie Fisher.
Yeah. I suppose that's true.
Yes, yeah. It is. I had a chance to see her on Broadway several years ago doing her one-woman show. And it was great. It was really funny. And she had really good advice in that show. She said, if you ever have the opportunity to have Paul Simon write a song about you, do it. Very good advice. So,
and that applies to 98% of the U.S. population. So,
yeah. I usually write him letters. He just doesn't answer.
He's very busy.
Yeah, I guess he is.
So, here's a question.
Okay.
Did Carrie Fisher actually appear in Rogue One?
No,
okay.
I guess get into the heart of it, right? But I just read she had a body double, but I think she might have done the voice for the one line, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I could see that.
So yeah, we'll get back to that in a bit. I have some other questions about that. But so what did we think?
Well, what are we talking about? Talking about Rogue One?
Talking about Rogue One.
Okay. What did we think?
What did we think of Rogue One?
Well, Jeremy is our special guest today.
Yeah.
One and only fan. So, you know, you can... we're excited to have you, and please lead us off. Yeah.
I feel like it's that scene in That Thing You Do when they're at the pizza joint and goes, hey, look, it's our fan.
It's our fan.
So it's funny. I got out of the theater, and my mom called, so I called her right back. She's like, oh, you went to the movie. How was it? And I was like, you'll have to listen to the podcast. She's like, I don't care that much. I was like, no, mom, please listen, please. Yeah.
So, was she like, what's a podcast?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Seriously.
Yeah. She's like, oh, you're doing that? Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah.
You mean TV? Yeah. No, not TV, mom.
It's like a radio show.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom makes that same face. Like, oh, you're doing that? Okay.
So Jeremy, what did you think of the movie?
Right.
Disney's Marvel Star Wars episode nothing, Rogue One.
So I literally just saw this movie 4 hours ago.
Really?
Yeah, so I was supposed to see it a couple weeks ago, and plans moved and whatever, and then I just kind of ran around. I was like, all right, I'm going to kind of go in fresh, go in blind. I avoided every single promotion, every single interview, anything I would normally pour through, in total detail. And so this was like, I was unfamiliar with the storyline and everything. I got to be honest, like, if this is where this is going, I wonder if it's like too much of a good thing is maybe not a good thing, right? So like if I had cake at every meal for every meal, would I eventually get sick of it? And I'm starting to like wonder, and unfortunately it has nothing to do with this movie in particular, because I think this was well done. It shows consequence in a Star Wars universe, which we typically don't see. I think last year when we saw Adam Driver take out our favorite Han Solo, that's the first time we've seen like a beloved character. Well, maybe not the first time, but with some regularity, we're starting to see characters that you're starting to know and love really die, right? And just kind of be written out so quickly. So it was very interesting. And it was like in the movie The Departed, towards the end of the movie, you go, if one more person gets shot in the head, I am going to absolutely lose my shit, right? and here, it's like, if one more character that they made me fall in love with or like or care about, like that dude that looks like the last airbender and is blind, or, like the I want to be the Rock / Iron Man / carry a vacuum cleaner on my back with a big gun guy, gets crumpled up in, all of the fire, I'm going to lose my shit. And I guess the movie did a good job of evoking emotion and making me connect with these characters instantly, because at the end of 2.5 hours, I was just pretty upset. But it was a good movie. I guess overall it's a good movie, but my initial impression is, this is a turn that they're taking, and it's very, very interesting how they're weaving these stories together.
Yeah. Interesting.
I commend you for not seeing any of that promotional stuff, man, because it was everywhere.
That's a Herculean task, sir.
That's like ears in your, or you know, fingers in your ears and like saying, la, 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 I can't hear you, as you literally walk past every toy store in the mall or, you know, TVs are on during NFL football. It's, you know, playing in the background, everything. It's crazy.
Yeah, because it was, they really beat you over the head with it now.
Yeah.
So, Phil? What did you think of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story?
When I saw it, I guess I saw it like a week ago or whenever it came out, and I liked it at the time a little bit, and then the more I thought about it, the more I didn't like it.
Yeah, so I'm hearing Jeremy talk, and then I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I felt the same way. And I'm thinking, give it time, Jeremy.
Let it rest.
It's, yeah. That's a thing I've noticed about. And I hate to jump on you, Phil, but I had the same exact thought. I was like, yeah, that was good at the end of that. And I had the same feeling, not so much at episode one, but like two. I was kind of like, that was a really good movie. And then I kind of let it marinate for a while. And is that a thing with Star Wars, do you think? That like, initially when you're in the moment, something about it is engaging and attractive and kind of sucks you in and you get excited about it. And then you go home and you hear one person who's a total skeptic and a crank say one thing, and then like the whole house of cards comes very quickly crumbling down.
Yeah.
It didn't take much for me to go, oh, wait. Oh, no, there were tremendous problems with this film. It was actually terrible. And it barely holds up on its own kind of thing.
Yeah, that's usually me.
Right. Yeah, that would be your job. Most you and the guys from Red Letter Media.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is that even though I'm talking to my brother and one of my best friends, I'm still like nervous to be like, I didn't really like it, you know? Like it's just, I'm always that guy and it sucks, but it you know, I can't unsee these things that are clearly there. I don't know.
So here's a question, Phil. How long, I mean, was it while you were watching the movie that, because I see these things and I kind of go, there's something not quite right with this, but I don't really know what it is, but I'm having a good time. I'm watching this and it's engaging to a point. Do you get that while you're there, and can you articulate it in the moment, or does it take you time to go home and think about it and then come back to it?
I know something's not right, and then it's not until later when I'm like, oh yeah, why wasn't that working? Because I'm piecing it together in my head. Like, I'm looking at how it's put together, how it works. So, like, even in this movie, like, the first hour, hour and a half, I was bored out of my mind. And I was trying to figure out why, and it wasn't until later when I was like, oh, it's because the characters, like, only three of them are interesting, and most of them don't have anything fun to say. So, like, I agree, I like the blind guy, his buddy the robot had a few good lines, and everybody else was just so drippy and boring.
So is the robot meant to be like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory exactly?
Yeah.
Or is Sheldon supposed to be C-3PO, which is like, it's like a, they're all facsimiles of one another. And so somebody else stole off of somebody else. Like as I'm listening to him, I'm like, oh my God, it is, you know, Jim Parsons playing that character. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It could be, the same, yeah. like the same mannerisms.
Yes, exactly.
Stuff too. I did have that thought.
God, that's funny. Yeah, that's too, what kind of bugs me, side note, about Jim Parsons in that role is he's playing a guy with a developmental disorder.
That's not what they say.
And they keep going on going, no, that we're not doing that. I go, that's exactly what you're doing. And I would know because that's what I do for a living. So I look at them and I go,
he may be on the spectrum. That's right.
Yeah, my God, it's astounding. Anyway, but that's the kind of humor that they were going for, you know, with the robot, was that kind of like, I can't quite fit into humanity kind of humor. And it worked in a very, you know, in that very microcosm kind of way. It was the only funny bit in the movie, which you want in a Star Wars. So,
but it wasn't. It was forced funny for me. Like, it's getting back to Jar Jar Binks being the comic relief, and like that's why characters like Han Solo in the original trilogy, he offers human and like witty, sarcastic banter, and is a very funny and engaging character that you care about. And C-3PO and the droids are there to sell merchandise, engage the kids, and also be narrators of the story to kind of retell layman for the layman viewer, I guess, right? Like, what's going on, or point out the obvious. Jar Jar Binks was terrible. They said, okay, well, we need a comic relief, and everybody else has such serious roles. Let's go ahead and throw that all on this, you know, floppy-eared, computer-generated whatever. And I felt like the whatever the line is, and they're in the elevator, and then the computer, you know, K2SO, you know, he tries to, like, quote one of the famous Han Solo lines, and everybody looks at him, and it's like definitely an Easter egg or like a little callback to, you know, the original trilogy. It's, I don't. If he dies, I don't care. Anybody else dies, I actually do care. So
yeah, although it's funny, of all the droids that get it, that, you know, you weren't told, like, you know, still can't get over the whole R2-D2 is too sad to talk to us about Luke from the last one. But, like, at the end of this movie, when, you know, K2SO is trying to fend them off, and he does take a couple in the shoulder or whatever the hell it is, like, I did kind of feel like, oh, he's really making an effort now to, you know, help the main characters that we're told to care about. And the way I know that is because they're telling us that he's making a real effort, right, to help the main characters that we're told to care about. So, yeah, I mean, everything he did, from trying to be funny to trying to... I mean, that's the thing with this whole movie. It's... They're reading their stage directions the whole time. Everybody, from minute one, even in the promotion, all they could do was say, it's a dark and gritty movie. That was basically their advertising, was to say, look how dark and gritty it is. It's so filthy and opaque, you can barely see it. And I which makes me wonder, did anybody actually ever see the original three? Like, that's what they're trying to do, is to give us things that they think we want to see. And there's, you know, it's dark and gritty, just like, the first three. They weren't dark and gritty. They were the opposite. I mean, it wasn't like a perfect antiseptic Star Trek universe where everything is super clean, but dark and gritty is not what I would use to describe the original movies.
Okay. But, well, so what did you think of the movie? Before we go off on tangents.
Yeah, exactly. At the time, I enjoyed the adventure romp, but what I was really kind of latching on was, like, there was no character development. And it's odd for me to be in a movie theater going, gosh, I wish I had some more character development in this movie. Because it was so obvious that there wasn't any. And that but not because it's like it had been removed. Like, there was a skeleton of it there. And there was, you know, chunks of a real film in here. But somebody had gone in and pulled that out and yanked this out and rearranged that and airbrushed this. And so I was kind of looking for things that I expected to see and never saw. And our friend Colin, you know, made a good point the other day at dinner. He was saying, like, go back and watch the first trailer. None of it is in the film. And I actually liked the first trailer better than the movie, because it was so interesting. But he's right. None of that's in the movie.
Yeah. When you talk about character development, right? Like, it's very difficult when you're trying to extend a story or come, I guess, back your way into a story that everybody's familiar with no characters, right? But the way that I felt about Daisy Ridley's character, Rey, and John Boyega's character, Finn, in a movie that, you know, went the other way, right, and kind of built on top of the existing storylines that we know, immediately within 10 minutes of seeing – 5 minutes of seeing those people on screen, I cared about those people even more so. Like, and I felt as though they had storylines and plot, and I want to know where they're going and what's going on. Didn't feel this – go ahead.
No, like you're right. There was, I mean, you didn't have to see much, but you had to see she's a scavenger. She's struggling for certain things. He's a stormtrooper. He's questioning everything that he's been brainwashed to believe. You know, you had those. You didn't get any of that with this main character of Jin. You got the backstory of the family for a few seconds, and it was basically run away and hide in that hole until, you know, the guy from Good Morning Vietnam comes to pick you up. That's pretty much all that you're told about her backstory. And then nothing. She wakes up, or rather you wake up, but she's in jail, and they break her out of the jail, and then you're off to the races. That's it? You know, and that's the reason when you go back and look at the first trailer and you see her give that line, well, this is a rebellion, isn't it? I rebel. And no, you don't. You know, you got in trouble and you went to jail. We didn't know why. We have no information about who you are other than that your dad is important to the Empire. And you know the guy used to be in Good Morning Vietnam. That's all we know about you. And so with Ray and Finn, yeah, you're right. You had a lot more of an attachment to who they were and what their struggle was. With her, you don't have a... She's just in jail. Well, okay. That's a good starting point, but I need to know more than that.
Yeah, and Phil, did you catch that? There was like a throwaway line somewhere in there that's like, oh, you're in jail for this and that and the other thing. And that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, like what was... Like vandalism, theft, things like that. Yeah. And then they just sort of break her out.
It would have been nice to see her doing some of those things.
She had no personality whatsoever. She was so dull. And it's not her fault because she's a good actress, Felicity Jones. She just...
Very good actress.
They didn't have her do anything.
I didn't recognize her as being the wife of Stephen Hawking from The Theory of Everything, which is a great movie, and she's great in it. I mean, I was like, oh my God, it's the same person? Yeah, she's fantastic, but yeah, she had nothing to do, you know. But again, like we're going to spend the next, you know, just like we do with Return of the Jedi. If we sit here and wonder how good it could have been if Spielberg had taken the helm, we're going to spend a while going, boy, I wonder what they cut out, because or what they changed, because there's a lot of it that you think could have been better, but maybe So we're going to spend time speculating about it for ages. Mm-hmm. But I mean, some things that I've heard that they changed, I think were a good thing. Some things, you know, seem to have, you know, there appear to be chunks of it missing that are awkward and funny. But I mean,
well, so I've gone back and I've started to check out, you know, articles written 8 months ago, right, about reshoots and change. So I'm curious to kind of piece all of those together, right, and. It does leave you wondering. It's like, where else was this going, and how did they end up here? So I'm not sure.
I mean, the one thing I heard about through the guys at Red Letter Media, and this is really funny, I think, but they had a screening, apparently, of 25 minutes worth of the film for what they called mommy bloggers.
Yeah.
There's apparently, yeah, this contingent of moms who have popular websites where they rate children's programming or stuff geared towards kids. And Disney wanted to get on their good side, and so they brought them in for a screening. And I'm pretty sure they just, you know, they showed them not so much the last, you know, half hour of the film, but I'm sure just chunks of the beginning. But that concerns me, because while I thought the end of the film was really surprisingly strong, except for the other bits of it. But the dark parts were fine. The things where everyone dies, that was fine. And I really want to know, like, how much of that really weighed on their decisions to go back and reshoot? Like, how much did they say, okay, mommies didn't like this because this is not going to be toygenic enough, and we're not going to be able to do well with the kids? And that part's just kind of sticking in the back of my head. Like, what did they fuck with, you know, to make this less dark and gritty than they kept telling us that it was? Like, it seemed like they were overcompensating the entire time they were advertising for this film.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm curious, is that, like, what is it they wanted to do? What was the actual story they wanted to tell? Was it about stealing these Death Star plans? Okay. Well, then how do we want to do it? Like, it felt like, I don't know, you guys didn't see Suicide Squad at all, but that was a movie that was supposed to be violent and dark, and it didn't test well, and they wanted to sell toys, and they chopped the hell out of it with reshoots. And it was very obvious when you watched it, like, okay, this is like five movies smushed together here. And and this is the same kind of thing. It felt like a fan movie at some points, you know, all the callbacks and Easter eggs. And it's like, well, we want to make like a war movie where they steal these plans from a base, but we also have to have TIE fighters and a space battle. And And we have to have those fish people that look like Admiral Akbar. And, you know. So, and the whole time I was sitting there watching, I was telling you the other day, this movie doesn't stand on its own whatsoever. It's completely bent. You absolutely have to know something about Star Wars to get anything. If I had taken my fiance to see this, she would have been so confused. And at the end, when it, you know, they die and they blow up that city and then the movie stops, she would have been like, where's the rest of the movie? Like, why are we stopping here? Just because it's an arbitrary end of the next movie starts. You know, it's, you can't have this without any of the nonsense around Star Wars. So,
yeah, and I'm fine with taking a MacGuffin, like going to get the plans and passing them off because that's important, and creating this epic heist kind of concept or movie around it, but they didn't even do that, I guess, right? Like, so...
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in an earlier pod, you guys had talked about, stop telling me these movies look good, right? The norm now is that they should look good, and I think you were talking about some of the animated movies in that context. And as I read reviews now online, it says, oh, it's the beautiful-looking movie, and... it's a little where everyone dies, and those are the things that we believe are, you know, part of the reasons why this is great. And again, right? I'm going to argue, I guess, later about it looking really good. I don't think it hit the mark for me on certain things. And then if that's the new norm, like, tell a better story. And if you have a total blank canvas to, you know, back your way into the story, you could have done a much better job of that. It could have been a crazy heist movie. It could have been, you know, there's that ominous feeling that everyone is destined to die throughout the whole thing. And, you know, maybe some, and there was none of that. I guess I didn't feel that quite yet. So.
Yeah, no, it's true. And even as a, as a pretty avid fan.
Hey, new beer.
Ooh, we have.
Ooh, Leffe.
I don't know that one.
Oh, it's delicious. It's,
I'm going to have to make a list of all the things we drink during this podcast. I've taken to adding that to the website is like a things we've enjoyed here on Spy. So that's going to be like 9 beers long. But what it was basically a fan movie in a lot of respects, but at the same time, I remember thinking to myself, okay, well, I'm a fan and I've watched these movies over and over again for the last 20 years. I, you know, I was only -4 when the first one came out, but I know a lot about this, and I found that I was looking for stuff that I was probably missing. Like, was that a callback? Was that a thing? Was that an Easter egg? Because it became so prolific that I was like, I felt like Jackie would have felt had she been sitting there with you, you know, wondering what she was looking at. Like, am I looking at a thing that's a callback to a movie made in 1977? Or what? So you get kind of...
Or even worse, Jimmy Smith, whatever his name is, calls back to the Clone Wars, which is like, I thought we all agreed not to talk about that. That's like my crazy Aunt Ida that is a part of the family but does her own thing, and she doesn't come up in a conversation. Like, that's something that is part of our history, but we refuse to acknowledge it.
You make a really good point there. Jimmy Smith says Basil Oregano. And I,
some of these names, by the way, are ridiculous. The guy's name is Churro. The other lady's name is Jin. Like, I got problems here.
Yeah, I didn't even know what their names were at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
No, I have no idea. I haven't got a clue.
I didn't know.
Haven't got a bloody clue.
I still think it's Churro. And I
I'm comfortable calling him Churro.
Yeah.
There's the blind guy. Like, that's how I went through
Churro,
it.
That's Churro, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, there's the blind guy, the guy with the vacuum cleaner on his back, which is really funny, by the way.
In, like, Iron Man colors. I don't know why, but...
Yeah. And, you know, the kid that looks like, I don't know, he looks like Aladdin to me.
Oh, you mean...
Casio...
Arrested Development's Buster mixed with Howie D from the Backstreet Boys?
Right. That is exactly what that guy looks like.
Yes.
So, oh, my God.
I went to see the movie, didn't take any notes except for that one, right? That's exactly what I wrote. I was like, he looks like Arrested Development's Buster mixed with Howie D from the Backstreet Boys. That's a fact.
As if he was built in an East German lab. It's amazing. But, but yeah, no, they, I mean, the names thing is just Luke. That's a name.
Yeah.
Han. That's not a name, but it's close to, it's a word in Chinese. Leia is a name. Ben, that's a name. Like,
yeah.
You know, they were kind of sparing with their weirdo fucking names. And here, it's like every name is, and it's never spelt the way you think it's going to be spelled. Gin. That's a word. It's got a spelling in English, but no, they spell it J-Y-N. Just drives me crazy. But you make a great point about Jimmy Smits being there. Because, and I wondered why that bugged me until right now. Now it's, you're right, it's like, oh, I thought we weren't going to talk about those. Why are we talking about those? Those were embarrassing. Like,
I think they're stuck. They're just stuck with them.
I mean, I can understand.
But couldn't they avoided them like entirely, right? Like,
there was no reason for a lot of these people to be where they were, but he especially. I mean, there was really no reason to have them all. I mean, Phil, you made a great point the other day when you said that the prequels really fucked the whole, you know, Star Trek universe, if you want to think of them as cinematic universes.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
Provode. Where, you know, those were supposed to take place about 35 years prior to, you know, to Luke and Ben Kenobi running around Tatooine. And in that first movie, you get that great line from Han Solo where, you know, hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid. Ancient weapon that was used 35, I'm 35, that's how long ago this was used. Ancient is not a word you'd think of in 1981. But that's how long ago this was to these people. And it got me thinking about something that somebody else on the Red Letter Media had said, where the guy who was like, listen, it is entirely possible that we have overestimated how expansive we can make this universe. We told a really neat story back in 1970, whatever the fuck it was. And it was epic and sweeping, and it had a lot of characters, and it was action-packed. And we got two more films out of it that were pretty good. But that might have been it.
Yeah. You know, I think in the hands of the right person, you can tell a million different stories, right? Like, and we see that with J.K. Rowling's talking about the Monsters and Beasts or whatever that series is, and I'm not a fan of Harry Potter in general, but you can create this expansive universe and essentially go wherever you want to go, but I just don't think it's been told all that well. And when I first saw the good guy, Cassius, whatever his name is?
Cassio, right?
Cassio, like sure, let's go.
Like the watch?
Like the, right, you know? The keyboard, right? Like that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I was hoping it was Dash Rendar, who is, all I know of him, a character from an N64 video game.
Yes,
he was like the lead protagonist in that.
Oh,
and that was awesome. And I was like, if this guy's Dash Rendar and he dies at the end, I'm going to be pissed. And he wasn't. And he wasn't, you know, engaging and whatever. But like, that's an engaging character, apparently, that somebody has some emotional attachment to. And this just wasn't. It was just...
It laid there, just flat on the screen. I mean, and it's possible that you're right, that they're, you know, if everything gets handled by the right people in the right way, that you could, because, you know, we all look at this and go, Jesus, there's things here that we enjoyed.
Right.
I've seen worse movies. I've walked out of, you know, I can think of, what, two movies that I've walked out of going, I don't know what the fuck this is. I have better things to do with my time. This is not one of those. It's not like it's terrible. It's not Batman v Superman, you know? It isn't. But at the same time, like, you kind of wonder, is this, should I be wasting my time doing this? Is this really worth it? I mean, there are certain things about the bones of Star Wars that make it hard to build upon. Star Trek, I think, does a better job of this because it's much more obviously science fiction. It gives you a structure that you can work on. Like, you know, these are the rules. And, you know, as long as we stay pretty much within these boundaries, we can tell lots of different kinds of stories. In Star Wars, the rules are a lot more haphazardly set down, and they did get screwed over by the prequels. And yep.
So I think I'm going to call both you and Phil out on this one, because in listening to you guys in conversations we've had and then also on some of the pods, you guys are clearly Star Trek fans over Star Wars, and that's fine. But... that's a very Star Trekian perspective to have, is
true.
You can do more here, and the thing that I like more, and that's why it's so much better. There's a lot of people that like Star Wars more, and I obviously come from the other side of things, not having been exposed to Star Trek at all, in general. But I still think in both scenarios you could tell a lot of stories, and if you've done it well, you've conveyed emotion and given somebody like I think we all walk away and say, Finn, I care about Finn, or Rey, I want to know more. Like, we were all okay with Han Solo dying because we had this new mantle being picked up by Rey and Finn to carry the franchise. And Adam Driver, like, that character is awesome. I want to see him be the biggest, baddest bad guy in cinema history. Like, he wants to be Darth Vader, and he's got that kind of going for him. I think we all kind of felt that at least last year when we saw this movie, or that movie, right? So. Yeah.
No, I think you're right. I think that it's harder with Star Wars. You know, I think you're absolutely right. We're definitely more, you know, sci-fi skewed towards Star Trek, but at the same time, it is easier. You know, they didn't handicap themselves like having to bring in Jimmy Smits or feeling the need to bring in Jimmy Smits for no reason. They didn't have to do that.
So my thing, like, I agree with you, Jeremy, that because when first, I heard they were redoing an episode 7. The only thing I said was, "God, for God's sakes, do something new. Like, just do something new." And the first, like, half an hour, 40 minutes of The Force Awakens, I thought was great because it was new people and we were, like, moving on from the Empire. And I was like, oh, this is good. Like, wow, they did it. And then it starts to, you know, Han Solo and Chewbacca and lightsabers And I'm like, okay, we're back to this stuff.
Yeah, but I give them one more movie, right? Like, the next one will be, this was their transition, right? It was get rid of Han Solo, and now that we've integrated and blended literally generations, we will see what they do. And Luke is their crutch. How much do they use him in the next movie? But I'll be interested to see how they build on the new characters that we now should all care about, right? So go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry.
So, like, and I agree, like, it's not, like, they're starting to do that. They're starting to move on to something new. And I disagree with you, Vin, a little bit, because it's easy in Star Trek because they have a lot of stuff. They have a lot of TV, has got more episodes. But it could be done in Star Wars, and this one feels like a throwback. Like, it's back to the old stuff, Rebels and Empire. And they're like, oh, man, like, we don't need to see how people stole the Death Star plans. Pick a different part of the galaxy. Pick different people. Like, I was thrilled there were no Jedi in this. I was like, cool, yes, let's do something else. No Jedi. Yeah. Show me a different part of the universe where stuff is going on. You know? It can still be in Star Wars. There's a lot of stories you can tell. But you have to do that. And sometimes, I guess they're, like, afraid people won't make the leap with them. They'll be like, well, where's my Jedis and lightsabers? Like, look, we're doing something different here.
But I haven't watched them. Isn't that what the whole TV series is? Like, the Clone Wars is so off the map. And kids love that, right? People die for the cartoon version of the Star Wars universe. So why have they not tapped into that to make it a 3-hour movie or 2-hour movie that everybody shells?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know why. And, like, I think, like, they had, like, the comic books and the novels and the, you know, even the video games. I was like, why didn't they do that? It's such a good idea.
Well, some of the video games the one for the N64, was it Shadows of the Empire?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That ran story-wise concurrent with Empire, but it barely touched on it. It was totally independent. And yeah, it was, this is a 20-year-old game now.
Yeah, he happened to be at Hoth when they were, you know, like, battling on the frozen, you know, tundra of Hoth, and that's it. Just like coincidence, right?
That's just their starting point, and they go off from there into totally different. I mean, yeah, there's a speeder bike chase, and but like the story was completely different, and the Knights of the Old Republic was a great story, and that was a very story heavy game, and yeah, there were Jedis, but it was totally devoid of anything we really were familiar with. But it still, it was 1,000 years prior to Star Wars, but it still looked like Star Wars. So there's definitely things they could do. I just wonder if it's, it's just harder with Star Wars. And so you've got a smaller margin of error, that it's harder to thread the needle for this because so many things have to work. And here's a question. Is it dependent upon your audience? Who is your audience for this movie?
I don't know. It didn't feel like children.
No, it didn't. But then again, it didn't feel like adults.
Phil, you mean the film where they kill off every one of the characters at the very end wasn't designed for kids? I'm so confused. I thought that's how little Frank was going to grow up and say, Frank, here it is. Hey, reality, everybody dies. Guess what? Better learn sometime, and you're four, so let's go.
But, yeah, they're not all Ewoks, pal.
Yeah. I mean, look, they all die. But
the Ewok that gets shot and all of a sudden, like, shakes it off and is fine? That doesn't happen. That's not what happens. Exactly.
That was rough. Side note about that, you actually see nobody die, do you? Do you see anybody actually die?
Yeah.
In this movie?
Yeah.
In Saving Private Ryan style with somebody holding them in their arms?
You see three people like that.
What's that?
You see Jin's dad die in her arms.
That's true. Okay, he died. But see, he's a necessary death that comes early.
The last airbender /
the blind dude,
Wonder,
yeah. Okay,
right?
No, you're right about that.
In the arms, yeah.
I couldn't recall that. He definitely did go right in front of them. But okay, yeah. No, I mean, this because there were so many of them that kind of bit it. But they did it in a very PG-13 way, which is like the thing is coming, and oh my god! And then you cut back and forth to the event and to the character, and then the character is gone, so you can't come back to him. But you're right. No, that's a good point. They didn't shy too far away from it. What did we like about the movie? I really liked about this movie. Think about that. I'm going to get a beer. Hang on.
Yeah.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Oh, thanks. What did you like?
You know, I like the fact that it dovetails nicely with A New Hope. Like, towards the end, I got very excited as, you know, they made their way to Leia and pass off. And that was like reviving some of the nostalgia, I guess, that we all have of the original trilogy. What I also liked, and it's a little bit of a broader, bigger point, is they show that, like, the rebellion would have some unscrupulous means to get to their end, which was, you know, like, in the very beginning, he kills the other guy that's the informant with a bad arm and can't climb up the... And so you've always think, like, the rebellion are these... You know, they're on the side of right. They're doing good. They're against the evil empire. And yet they're spies, assassins, you know, double agents, what have you. And I don't think you've ever really seen that to this degree. And then even when, you know, obviously everything gets turned down and she's trying to, you know, get everybody to approve everything, they basically say, like, we've done this all for the sake of change. And if aren't going to make change, then we are assassins and killers and bad guys. And so, you know, like, we need to get to this end for the means to be justified. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, I agree. I thought that was great. I liked all the violence, which sounds stupid, but, like, I agree. Like, this is supposed to be, it's the Star Wars.
Right.
And so, like, people were constantly getting zapped and lightsabered at the end and, like, blown up.
Also, and, like, how many shots with a blaster does it take to put you down? Because some people it was one, some people it was like six. So I have questions.
Why do stormtroopers wear armor? It doesn't do anything.
Oh, I think that it's propaganda. It doesn't actually work. They just make them think it works. Otherwise, nobody would want to do it.
Also, and this is weird, do you feel bad now when you see a stormtrooper die based off of what you saw in the last movie? They were so disposable in the first six movies for me. And especially when I knew they were clones, right? And then all of a sudden Finn and the other guy that, like, dies and takes his bloody hand and puts it on Finn's mask, whatever. There's some, like, humanizing of these stormtroopers. And it couldn't help but bleed into this movie for me. I'm watching it, I'm like, every time one of these guys dies is just as important as a rebel guy. They just so happen to be either, you know, falsely enslaved or, you know, like... enslaved by exactly right, or it's like they
have these guys were still clones, right? Is that what this was?
I don't think so. They didn't feel like it.
No, it never feels like it. They all have different voices.
Yeah, I just assumed that they were like guys who were drafted or like impressed to do it kind of thing.
So my question now is, when did that change from the Clone Wars, where all these guys were just copies of one guy. Which, by the way, I always thought that was kind of a neat idea.
That they were clones?
And it was also Boba Fett, right? Is that
Yeah, but it was his dad, yeah.
Yeah, Django.
Django?
Yep.
You know, like the Quentin Tarantino movie?
Django Fett Unchained.
Exactly.
That's a movie I would see. See, okay.
I would pay to see that.
All right. I'll ask the questions here. This is my podcast. Phil, what character from the Star Wars universe would you want to see a movie centered around? And you can't use Dash Rendar.
Oh, damn.
And Vince, you're next, so.
Shit.
And I'll give you 30 seconds to stall, because the extended, you know, all of the other books and novels that were created by, you know, so many different authors over the years, I think was basically, Phil, you had mentioned, it's like thrown out the window. When Disney bought it, they're like, yeah, no, Luke's second brother, this, that, whatever. Yeah, all that's kind of hogwash. We're going to rewrite the script, right? We're going to start clean and kind of do our own thing. So maybe those characters don't exist in this new universe, but I don't know. Is there somebody that you'd want to see a plot or like make their way into a movie, or even a character from the other movies that you'd want to see more highlighted as a main character?
Like, I really thought it was interesting in The Force Awakens when Luke was training Jedi and it didn't go right and Kylo Ren became like a villain. I would have loved to see like one of those guys he was training and just have like Luke in the background. Because like Luke, let's say Luke doesn't know what he's doing and he's trying to figure it out himself and he doesn't go well. Like, oh, tell me that story. How does that work?
Right.
You know, I'm trying to train Jedi and it's not going pretty great. So
I'm no Yoda.
Yeah, I'm no Yoda or even Obi-Wan.
So Vince?
Do that movie.
Yeah.
Who would I most like to see? It's odd because there were already enough films made about this character, but Leia. Because somebody made this point, because the poor woman died recently, that...
Wait, Carrie Fisher died?
Yeah.
Okay.
The gold bikini really kind of screwed her, and it shouldn't have. Because she was, you know, she wasn't there by choice. It was like, you know, you're, you know, a prisoner now. This is what you have to wear. But she's, 5'2"? And in that first movie, she stands up to those two big, you know, the general what's-his-face and Darth Vader. And she just kind of stands there as they blow up her planet. And she's like, and she just takes no guff from them. And she lies right to their face about everything. And you kind of want to go, well, how do you get there? You know, you were dropped off on that down the River Nile in a basket. And they hand you off to Basil Oregano, whatever his name is. And you grow up on this planet and you become a princess. And then, like, the leader of the rebellion. And you're tough as nails. How do you end up like this?
Right.
So it would be an interesting story to me to see somebody who is called a princess, who behaves like a general. How do you end up doing that? It's one of these... kind of write yourself into a corner and now explain yourself and, you know, and make it really creative. But that, I mean, of all the ones that I can think of, that's the one that hasn't been explored at all. She just is what she is. I mean, everyone kind of accepts it, but it was unusual at the time and it's still unusual. So I'd be curious to see if they could write something that would explain that in an interesting way. So that's my pick.
Yeah. And, I think I kind of alluded to it earlier, but like Boba Fett to me is a badass character that doesn't get enough airtime. And unfortunately, an untimely death, spoiler alert, when it falls into the sand pit or whatever the hell it is, right? And gets killed, you know, in one of the original trilogy. But like that whole concept of he and Han Solo have been at it for years and they've been, you know, like kind of these smugglers and mercenaries that have been kind of like at each other's throats and whatever. And Jango Fett is a thing and like was the, you know, put on a pedestal enough that they modeled all the Clone Wars and everything after it. Like, so I'd love to be able to come at it from that. Like, and you know, I keep going back to Dash Rendar, right? But he too is one of those same kind of thing. Like, he had the Millennium Falcon for a period of time. Like, how does that happen? How does that story go? And you could have done a whole movie about that. That doesn't tie to anything that we know of in the Star Wars universe. And I guess, Phil, that's your point, right? Is do a whole movie that's within the universe and it's all plays by somewhat the same rules, but tangentially touches the stories that we know, not as a, like, you know this happened, and therefore we're going to shoehorn a storyline and a movie into what you already know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the pitfall to avoid, is don't try to cram it full of just, we don't need to know everything else. We just, you know, keep it sparse, tell an individual story, which we didn't really do here. I missed a bit of that getting the beer. Do you guys both do things you liked about the story?
Yeah, and I was just saying, I enjoyed all the violence because it was like the only emotion I was getting out of the movie.
Yeah,
you know?
I agree.
Nobody was happy, or they were never excited about anything, but all the death and destruction was like, whoa, I can like relate and feel that as I watch, so it kind of drew me in a little bit.
Definitely.
What about you?
That same thing. You know, I enjoyed, the scenes in the film were great. Strung together, they made a really kind of mediocre film. But individually, taken as they were, you know, they were fantastic. I mean, I think the high point actually was the Darth Vader fight at the end of the movie. That was
yeah. So should we easily talk about Darth Vader?
We could. Because there's good and bad with it.
Jeremy, is that okay?
Oh yeah.
It was so cool because he was finally menacing again. He wasn't walking down Main Street USA in Disney World. He was, you know, he was a terrifying guy. He was cutting people in half. But that only came in that one scene. That was sort of like the other side of the coin, which you get all these great scenes that, you know, we looked at individually could be very exciting. But you know, when you put them together, it didn't quite so. Like, so all right, so we're talking about Darth Vader now, or all the old characters. How did he look to you guys? He looked weird to me.
So this is real nerdy, but as if the first 50 minutes of this pod have not been.
We're already pretty deep in the pool.
Yeah,
here,
right. Yeah. There was a redesign to the Darth Vader helmet between the original trilogy and the trilogy done in the 90s, early 2000s. And so I, just having seen it once, I can't really say, but I'm interested to see which of the designs they went with. And I also prefer him being shot in a darker kind of scene where, first of all, his lair on a volcano island is friggin' awesome. Yeah. When I die and come back as Darth Vader or an evil villain in my next life, I want to be on an evil volcano island and have my own like lair that people would, you know, come to, and then I can
like a Bond villain. You need like a volcano lair,
which is also
or a moon base.
Yeah. Side note, like the fact that Jin's dad was also actually a Bond villain in another movie. I kind of had a tough time with that too. I was like, am I supposed to root for this guy, or is Daniel Craig somewhere? Like he was in the last Star Wars movie, going to come out and like, you know, money penny this bad boy or whatever. So, yeah.
I have a hard time seeing him as like a good guy because he plays such bad guys all the time.
And we get it; he wasn't that bad, right? Even though he built the machine, you know, he put a little, you know, like how many times did they hit that? Oh my god! Oof.
I know. Yeah. So yeah, no, I should really Google the Darth Vader helmet thing. It looked a little bit, I don't know, chintzy to me.
It looked round and cheap. Yeah.
It looked like a Halloween costume. Like you could have gone to Party City and gotten the exact same costume, which they might have done.
Right. And that's why I say he looks better when he's shot in a darker room or in like a, you know, further away shot, because the close ups of that, like gesturing towards my neck, if you think about it, like that neck piece should never, you know, it looks plasticky, right? Instead of this metal, like badass kind of, you know, intimidating. It looked fairly cheap. Yeah. And maybe it's because we've been desensitized to it, and we see it, like you said, on Main Street USA and in Disney in the parade, you know, waving and throwing out candy to kids, but it wasn't as badass as I've remembered him to be until that last scene. And then, like, Phil, you said it, like, he came in and busted shit up. It was the best 5 minutes sequence of the whole movie. And that's really where I, you know, kind of got into like the, all right, I'm going to leave the movie charged because that's the number one bad guy I've ever seen on film. And it brings me to something familiar. So,
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, what's funny is if you go back and watch the original, and Phil, you have the original unedited, just pure Star Wars movies, which I think I'm actually jealous that I don't have those.
They're the bonus features on the special editions. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, were the unmolested films from the 70s and 80s. But like, if you look at it, it looks just as plastic and chintzy, and there's like schmutz on it. It's like got fingerprints and things. But for some reason, it doesn't look bad. In this movie, it was one more fan service thing. They go, look, he looks just like he did in 1977. And you wanted to go, well, yeah, but in 77, I bought it. Like, it's now, you're right. You need to see him in a different, you know, either a different lighting or a different, but something to make it look a little bit more, you know, it's 30 years later.
I think you're right, Jeremy. It's just, you're so desensitized to seeing him that, like, when he came up out of the volcano lair to like, yell at that guy, I was like, this isn't scary. I am not frightened by this guy. Why is he wearing that stupid cheap suit? It wasn't until the end when I was like, oh, he's actually, like, a violent murderer. Okay.
Right.
But before that, it's like, ugh, there's this guy again. I saw him on my cornflakes box the other day. Like, there's a Mr. Potato Head version of him. It's just too much.
I love the whole thing where he comes in and he's getting out of that, like, bath.
Oh, my God. Now, that was cool.
That was cool. And then they, like, if that had been conducted, like, that conversation had been conducted when he's half naked, that would have been really neat. Because, like, you know, he's got no armor on. He's, you know, and the guy would be kind of like, oh, don't, I can't look at you. You're freakishly weird, you know, but I'm still terrified of you. And if that exact same conversation had happened while Darth Vader was, you know, in the process of putting on the suit, you would have seen less of him, you know, for discretion reasons. But also to have that level of fear for a character who's already nude would have enhanced his terror. You know, like, it's hard to be afraid of somebody who's naked because they're already physically vulnerable to you. It's like the beginning of Forgetting Sarah Marshall is so great. He's getting dumped and he's got no clothes on. And the whole joke in the movie is like, if I put clothes on, then we're going to break up. If I stay naked, then you have to sit here and be nice to me because I'm nude. And there's something about, like, physically being naked that makes you vulnerable. If it is inverted for Darth Vader, if he's just as terrifying when he's not when he's unclothed, that sort of enhances his terror factor. And if you see less of him, like the shark in Jaws, for Christ's sakes.
Well, fucking, yeah, I think I hadn't thought of that, right? But, like,
the scene me either. Yeah.
I hadn't thought of Darth Vader naked being the more powerful version of himself. But if you think about it, like, the Terminator, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, as he lands on, you know, Earth or wherever he's, you know, he is, like, in that barroom brawl, right? Mm-hmm. The bikers are all laughing at him and everything else, and there's Arnold Schwarzenegger and is, like, 10 times, right, inverted and flips it on his head and says, like, I'm more intimidating and powerful in what was traditionally associated with the more vulnerable of positions. I'm going to kill people and steal their clothes and be the Terminator, and I'm a bad guy. It's abundantly clear, and that's very badass and awesome. There would have been something powerful, I guess, if you stay on that scene, and not that, you know, you need to show Darth Vader naked, because I don't think I've ever said that phrase in my life, but...
yeah, I think I'm good without seeing that.
Right. I might have said it a couple times. Like, you, Phil, you don't remember show college. It. What did I do?
Not well. No, but like, you don't show, but it's implied. You see less of him.
Well, right, and that would have made him scary, despite the fact that he's hooked up to tubes, and it's obviously like some kind of like keeping him alive type of thing, and he looks like Bane as he has like this baldy head and... you know, the mask on him, and he's got breathing tubes, and he's being hoisted in the air, and he, like, Weapon X type of, like, hookups to everything, whatever. If you're still scared of a man that is in the most, like, vulnerable of positions, like, that's saying something about the gravity that character carries. And yeah, I was interested. It's not as scary to see the plastic mask and him, like, dancing around or walking around, you know, half a scene later, so...
Yeah, no, it's you know, and then okay, so can we finally get to the elephant in the room? Speaking of things that should be scary and that are not, Mm-hmm. Grand Moth Tarkin, General.
Oh, the dead guy that's now in the movie?
Died 22 years ago.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
And also the alive actress at the time that is also in the movie and the final scene, you know, Carrie Fisher, right? So
yeah.
While the movie was still around, they digitized her face and your general there to be put over top of a body double. And they put in voice, you know, kind of voice acting over top of it to give the lines.
What did y'all think of that?
Phil.
Here's my thing. I don't know why they did this. Like, I got used to seeing Peter Cushing. After a while, I just sort of adjusted. I'm like, okay, he's there. But why? Why not just cast a younger guy to be him? Like, in all those commercials and previews, I thought the guy with the white flowing cape, I thought that was just going to be a younger version of him. And then it turned out to be a different character. Because I'm like, in 30 years, are we going to be doing this with all of them? Like, are we going to have young Han Solo, young Luke Skywalker? Like,
yeah,
you have to recast eventually, right?
So that's a good question.
So, like, why do that? I don't understand. It can't be cheap or easy. Just hire somebody else.
I know why.
Why?
Because he's a character in the cartoon.
So?
That's it. That's the reason. He's a character in the cartoon. So the kids are looking for General Tarkin. And they made a cartoon character to play opposite the real people.
Okay. But to be fair, and I did a quick look up before this because this is something that stood out to me. General Dodonna, didn't know that was a character, was in the initial A New Hope as a British actor who died in 1990 and was recast for this movie with another actor. And then similarly, Mon Mothma, the Irish actress coming from Revenge of the Sith, I guess she was in that one too, but like that character was in the original ones as well, and it's now
The woman.
The lady Congress lady, right? So they took two other auxiliary characters and put them in and said, we're going to recast and give you somebody that's like red hair and close enough, and old guy, white beard, close enough.
Yeah. They like creepy old guy on the standing on the bridge with his arms behind his back. Good enough.
Yeah, right. No. I think
also it's not 100%. And I've seen, you know, Phil, you know, right? Like PS4 video game like screenshots that look better than the CGI they had here. I was so confused. Yeah. It looked more like that bad guy from the last movie that was sitting in the chair that was a hologram that wasn't really there. And I was kind of expecting these persons to be holograms too, because it's abundantly clear they're not real people. And
yeah,
the CGI face just didn't do it for me. And somehow I'm okay with a droid standing there that is clearly made from CGI, but the people version of CGI people, like,
it's creepy.
I'm out.
It's the definition of an unforced error, because you didn't have to do it at all. There's no reason.
And they're being lauded for doing that, by the way.
Really?
I'm reading stuff on like New York Times is like, how did they do that? And here's how. And they did it with Carrie Fisher, right? They took basically footage from the 70s and 80s and said, we're going to compile some composite of this to give you 7 seconds of on-screen time of 19, 25-year-old Carrie Fisher for the last shot of this movie.
See, it's great that the New York Times is wondering why. It's like when NPR has like sports articles or like, you know, they ask questions about things they know nothing about. Like, so is Avatar the best film ever made because it's earned $1 billion at the box office? Yes. That's your answer, you idiot. Yeah, no. I mean, this to me was just, it was bad. It looked bad. And I'm not so sure it could have looked any better. I'm not saying that they fucked it up. Like, there could have been better CGI here to make this. You didn't need to do it. And you could have had the character there. I mean, when I first saw him, his face was reflected in the glass. And I went, oh.
And I thought that was cool. Like, maybe they'll just have that. Like, here he is. He's nearby. He's still here. And, like, because it through the glass, it looks fine.
Sure.
Because you're not. It's supposed to be distorted. And then he had more lines than some of the main characters. I was like, oh, man, this is weird.
This guy wouldn't shut up. And I'm like, dude, stop. Don't. I can't look at you thing in the mouth face. What's wrong?
Does he have
What's wrong with your face?
Yeah. Does his family get royalties from that? Does he get like a screen credit for that?
That's
on
a
SAG card.
Question.
Like, is that a? I want to know how that works. Like,
no, that I thought the same thing. I go, well, this is a dead man. They've taken the face of someone who's been in the ground for over two decades. Who? I mean, it's clearly supposed to be him.
Do you think the body double gets mad? Like. I'm doing all the work, but my face isn't here.
Right, I played Governor Targhan. No, you didn't.
Did
that
you,
was
though?
That guy that died.
It's like that guy in that awful, it wasn't awful, but it was bad, that social network movie that played, it was Armie Hammer, played both guys, but it was really two different physical human beings, and they took Armie Hammer's face and they just kind of morphed him onto the other guy. Like, there were two guys on screen. But they took one guy's face and then covered him with Armie Hammer's face, so he was a twin. That guy gets a credit, but you know, I wonder who the hell got credit for playing Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, no, that and the Carrie Fisher thing. I mean, that was bad for. I mean,
It's even worse with Carrie Fisher because
it is worse.
We all know and loved that character. And just the iconic shot of her in that white dress with the hood up from the side or the back, you know who it is, right? And you don't need to turn around and be beat you over the head with it. And if you do, you got to do a better job of that. I mean, it's got to be seamless. It's got to be, that looks like Carrie Fisher. Or you take stock footage and you rework the shot from the 1970s version of it and you enhance that and get the word hope and put that,
just like move the mouth or something.
You know what would have been great, and I don't know that they didn't do this because of George Lucas, but I mean, the first impression you get of her from the first thing that sticks out in my head is the recording she leaves in R2-D2. So the whole thing is that they finally get the plans, they run them down the hall past Darth Vader, and they hand him off to Captain Antilles, and there she is. What if instead you see someone like pass the thing down the line, and then she goes over to R2 and begins to record the message? And you don't necessarily you don't have to show her. She doesn't even have to say anything. But you know what she's doing. It's a character in the same costume, in the same pose, bending over to tweak the little knob on R2. Like, there's enough fan service in the minimalism of these things. It doesn't have to be so overt. And they chose to go in a very obvious and clumsy direction instead. And it's an unforced error. They could have avoided the whole thing and then but still gotten what they, I mean, the fans go nuts over anything. They don't need something to be shoved into their face to say, this is the thing, right? This is the thing you wanted to see. We're showing it to you. You know, they just even hints and whispers at it, they would have been fine with.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't do that. They gave it the full Monty.
Yeah, they didn't do it. So.
Ugh.
All right. So what do we think overall? Yay, nay?
I still think I enjoyed it, right? Like, it's an hour of kind of nothing, and overall it is it's like hotel desserts, right? Like, you got dessert, it's something that you generally like, but it's not the best version of tiramisu, it's just a facsimile or like a copy of it. Close enough, right? Like, it is,
like, it's sweet,
right? And I'm not gonna go, like, I'm not gonna rave about it when I go home, be like, oh, I got this, you know, for dessert, it was delicious, you should ever try it. You should just kind of, like, it is what it is, and it served its purpose. I got 2 hours of enjoyment out of it. Very interested to see if they take any of the things we talked about and, like, run with it, right? Do they take side universes and side characters that barely touch things and go with that? Or do they continue to try and like have all these tributaries to the main story that we all know and love? Or, I mean...
Yeah, and will people ever get tired of it?
Great question.
Like, when do people like, you know what? I don't want to see this side movie about the one pilot who got squished under an AT-AT at Battle of Hoth. Like,
by the way, those are not AT-ATs in this movie.
Are they different?
They're AT-ACTs.
Oh, that's like they get blown up very easily?
Exactly.
Oh.
They're cargo transports, in case you were wondering. Did some quick Googling because they look different.
There was
also, I thought the way to take those down was like run around them with a little cable and tie up their legs and then have them fall. But
I was like, oh, they blow up really easily. What the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, like in Captain America 3.
Right.
Yeah. I just watched that like an hour ago. Apparently some guy, I don't know when he did this, but... remember the big fat guy who was driving the snow speeder in Empire? They called him Porkins.
Porkins.
So apparently somebody, I think it was a fan, wrote like either a graphic novel or some kind of a fan novella. It's called The Ballad of Porkins.
God.
And I think that's just a great name. But it's apparently about this guy who was like a nobody who just lived under the Empire. It's no big deal. And then just something happens and... When they just decides, all right, that's enough. I've had it. He puts down whatever he's doing, and he gets up and he goes and joins the rebellion. And like that's the kind of thing that we think we want to see, maybe, but we don't. I don't know, because this didn't work for me. But I can't tell if it's the core of it or if it's just the execution of it that I didn't really care for. But overall,
well, it's an origin story for. A plot device. It's not an origin story for a character. It's not anything to do with the Force. It's not. It's there's no second movie out of this, right? Like there isn't,
right?
Well, and that's what sucks, right? Like I guess we've all, and maybe we're being kind of hypocritical and talking out of both sides of our mouth, right? But the idea that like we've always said, oh my gosh, you know this sucks that they're coming out with a second movie. It clearly sets up for the next movie. I don't know. Like, maybe I don't want that. Or maybe I do want that. And this movie, there's nowhere to go. It drives you to a dead end, which has already been written.
See, so, I actually liked that. I mean, the handoff to this was a bit more clumsy than I would have liked.
Well, I like the handoff, but not one character steps away and has another story to tell.
Right, yeah. I mean, it only works because you know, like everything else Phil said, like it only works because you know what happens next.
Right.
And at the same time that like so much of the film was dependent upon that in and of itself might not have been the worst thing. I liked the fact that they all died. I liked the fact, like you said, there was consequence to this. Like they...
Yeah.
That was something that, you're right, is missing from a lot of these films. And even when they went from Empire to Jedi and... Harrison Ford said, you have to kill me. I have nothing else to do in this film. Kill me off. It's going to raise the stakes for the rest of the movie, and they're all going to wonder, who else is going to go if you kill off one of the main characters in the first 10 minutes? I mean, but they didn't do that. And here they did. They went so far as to say, none of them make it. And they email the thing out, and it gets off to the rebels in a different way. And we all know that story. But they're all going to bite it at the end of this. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, I kind of applauded that in a way, to say that we're going to really make you, you know, give you that good old gut punch at the end to say that we've killed them all. And so I think you're right, is that you feel like this is the beginning of something, even though it's also the end of it, because they're all dead. So, but Phil, overall...
Vince, you liked it? Halfway...
I liked it in its. I liked the bits of it that were good, and the bits of it that were good were.
What the hell kind of answer is that?
Well, like it's. Individual.
I like the tasty parts. The parts that were icky, I didn't like.
Right. Yeah. You know,
dinner was great, except for the parts I didn't like.
I mean, the parts were. I don't know how you want to phrase this.
Pros and cons column, right? Pros. It shows consequence. It shows. Dying and war is exactly what we're talking about here.
And the, And the scenes on the beach at the end were good. And I, you know, the stuff that was good was really good. And then the stuff that was bad was things that were obvious and clumsy. And they didn't have to do these. It was poor decision making rather than poor storytelling. And the problem with the film overall is that I don't know why they did the things that they did. And we're never going to know that because they're never going to tell anybody.
Right.
But the things about it that were fun. And I'll watch it again just to kind of make sure I'm not crazy. But overall, I'd say it's a very mediocre. If I had to look at the film in its entirety, it's not as good as Force Awakens. And, you know, it's not as bad as... the thing. We've all got the first, the prequels to go, well, it's not that bad, right? You know, that's kind of a saving grace for the rest of these movies, is that, like, we could make them this terrible, but we didn't, right? So, yeah. It's a very mediocre offering, I felt, when they really had a lot of opportunity for something better. The shitty long answer, but that's my answer.
Okay. I didn't like it. I thought it was boring. I didn't really like any of the people in it. I thought they were joyless, faceless. Gray people wearing gray in gray backgrounds. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Was it the worst movie of all time? No. It had some good action scenes, but overall I was like, yeah, this could be so much better.
Yeah.
So I know it's a sacred cow. Everyone loves Star Wars, and I always look like a grump and a crank because I don't like it that much, but it's nothing personal. I just didn't like the movie, everyone. Relax.
Phil staying on brand. Love that.
Yeah.
There was a good example that the guys at Red Letter Media did, where they showed you a scene from this movie where, like, they're fighting in the streets, and they showed you the scene prior to the trash compactor scene in Star Wars, and how, like, they're, like, having witty banter as they're shooting down the hallway, and they're going, like, just imagine this scene without them talking, and that was Rogue One. You know, you take out all the character stuff and all the interesting bits of dialogue, and that's what this movie was. And I was like, oh my God, he's absolutely right. Because they re-edited it, and I watched it. I was like, oh my God, that's true. So they did sort of suck the soul out of it when they could have put one in.
Mm-hmm. Couple quick questions for you guys. When they were building the Death Star, is it the most practical thing to put that big indent, concave indent in at one time? Because that's how they showed it being done. I feel like you would do that in pieces. Didn't know if you guys caught that.
Yeah. That's weird. Oh, like it's like a big satellite dish kind of thing.
Right, like they just drop the dish in, they're like, and now it's complete. We're all done here. But I feel like, what planet, literally, do you need to build that on? And then how difficult is that to transport? Like, can't you put it into, like, you know, like solar panels one at a time? Yeah. I feel like there's a better way to do that.
You know what I really liked was, like, when the Death Star itself would go through hyperspace.
Yes.
And it just... boom, like, appeared, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Didn't know that it had that power, but yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Like, oh, that's how it moves.
That happened quick. I think I blinked and I missed that, because I remember, like, it wasn't there, and then it was. And I went, did that just go? Because you don't think about that going through hyperspace.
Right.
Because it's so large.
It moves, like, you know, an inch a minute, right? So
I mean, they have gotten so much mileage out of that one idea of this giant circle floating through space.
So two more things real quick. In regards to that big vending machine at the end where they go to find the data plans and file, right? It's like it's like the claw machine at the arcade game, right? You're going up and left, and then you're pushing it in and trying to get the right one, whatever. I thought that was a little whatever. And you knew that they were going to have to jump out and go get it themselves, whatever. But one thing that I did like about the movie is she's reading through all of these code names for all these evil projects and everything. And basically the architectural, or, you know, like the blueprints to all of these evil plans and projects are all housed in this giant library. She's reading through a dozen names or so, and you cannot help but think, holy cow, like, we know of the Death Star because we've kind of gotten wind of this. There's so many other things that they're doing that are incredibly heinous and evil that are all in development. And you're staring at the room where there's got to be hundreds of thousands of different data files of blueprints of these bad and evil things. Like, we're just scratching at the surface of what, you know, they are ready or working on. And I thought that was it could have been way cooler, or at least way more highlighted than it really was.
Yeah, they hint a lot at all that stuff, and you sit there and like, oh, I wish they'd just go into that a little more, or I hope they do later, you know.
And yet we've seen 7 movies about the Death Star, so
yeah.
I mean,
maybe they were just cool code names. They're like, we'll come up with things about them later,
right?
Right. That's pretty. See, and
Rocky Top and Shadowbox and Bailey the Dog. Yeah, whatever you got. Right.
Just throw it out. Whatever.
Right. See, I didn't even think about it. That's a really good point because they were terrifying and they were kind of like, well, what is Operation Death Trap mean? What is that? Like, and yeah, there was things you didn't really think about because I was so focused on the fact that this was basically a larger version of the computer in Clear and Present Danger, starring Harrison Ford from 1994, where it's like the big arms come along to move big data disks from one thing to the next. And the fact that I knew the code word for the program was going to be Stardust. And I was waiting for her to say, oh, it's Stardust. That's the right one. Let's go get that one.
Also, so, if your dad named the biggest weapon in the world after you, how do you feel? Like, is that like Father of the Year award? Like, hey, he named the atom bomb after me. My name is Adam, right? Like, what do you?
And then I got killed with it.
Right. Literally, it is staring me down the face, and I get blown up by.
And I got blown up.
Thanks a lot, Dad.
I always thought that was Adam, ATOM. I didn't know. Right. No, ADAM.
No. Up and Adam.
Up and Adam.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. My eyes, the goggles, they do nothing.
They do nothing. And to answer your last question, no, you don't get paid for being on the show. Sorry.
I feel like I asked that before and you said yes off camera, so I'm going to hold you to that one.
Some lovely parting gifts for you, though.
Smart. Very smart.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts, anybody?
About this one?
About anything. It's the end of the year.
We're going to do our end of the year wrap up 3 things.
Yes, no? Yeah, you go first.
Me?
Do it quickly, though. No.
Yeah. Do you have to pee? All right, so we were saying before, best movie, best TV show, and best book, I guess, because we can read, and that's nice. Best movie was hard because there weren't really a lot of good movies this year. So I think the best movie I saw was Deadpool.
Oh, Deadpool.
Which was sort of like, a couple years ago, it was all about like Birdman and Whiplash and all these kind of highbrow Oscar films. But this year, I'm like, I didn't see many of those. I didn't see many films just because I haven't had the chance to get out of the house. But I did see Deadpool, and that was the best of them. I mean, it was just, it was unabashedly what it was, and it was funny, and it was... I mean, Ryan Reynolds at his best and just really clever direction and just a really good movie. Best TV show was Stranger Things, unquestionably. That was a fantastic show. And looking forward to the second season. And although I've heard they're kind of continuing with the same characters, which is an okay idea, but kid actors age poorly. They just do. They lose their charm at some point. So we'll see how that goes. And my best book was, I don't read much fiction these days, but I did read Station 11 by Phil, what's her name again? I can't think of her name.
I don't know.
Yeah, but the book is called Station 11, and it's a
St. John Mandel is her name.
What's that?
Emily St. John Mandel is her name.
I would never have thought of that. Yeah, it's like 5 words.
Google spit it out. So.
Yeah. So, excellent book about it's a very literary, but it's a sort of science fiction-y post-apocalyptic end of the world disease kind of thing that really stuck with me. It was a really good book, and I guess the fourth thing was things we're looking forward to in 2017, and that would be for me Sherlock, which comes back in just 3 days from now, and I'm really excited about that. So that's my 4 things basically. So.
Okay.
Next.
Well, you stole my movie because I thought Deadpool was great. It was super fun to watch. It was funny. I wouldn't take my girlfriend, but I enjoyed it.
My dad's like, yeah, don't watch that with Michelle. You should just, on your own, just catch that by yourself.
Yeah, you know, not, it's not a good date night movie.
No.
I didn't have a good TV show this year because I didn't see Stranger Things. And I didn't really... the only thing I spent most of my time watching was Luke Cage, and I hated Luke Cage. Oh. It was stupid.
Poor guy.
So I'm mad that I wasted all my time watching it. Which was a shocker because all the other ones were really good. You know, Jessica Jones and Daredevil were really great, but Luke Cage kind of dropped the ball. And then my book I read was, I read the Alexander Hamilton biography before I saw the play or heard the music, and it was fascinating. Fascinating shit. You know,
good book.
Smart guy. Yeah.
Well, it's a well-written book, very almost like it's a novel kind of thing. It was good.
Right. It was really interesting, really well done. So if you don't know anything about him, which most people didn't and still don't, even though they've seen the play, like, yeah, read the book. It's really, really good.
They talk about him now like they know, but they haven't got a clue. They have to read the whole thing.
Yeah, it's quite long, so it takes a while.
700 pages.
And what am I looking forward to next year? I really am excited to see the Lego Batman movie. Like, it just looks so funny. Like, the Lego movie was so great.
Yes. And does Will Arnett get thrown in the conversation for best Batman in a movie? Like, already, yeah, like, he's above George Clooney. We get that, right? Yeah. But where else does he, like, how far can he climb up that ladder?
Yeah, like between Burton and Val Kilmer, maybe?
That's what I'm talking about, right?
You know, like, yeah. Definitely, yeah, he's really good. So I'm hoping that is as funny as the previous show.
Awesome. Good.
How about you, Jer?
So, I got some really bad answers here. you know, I actually am going animated for movie. I really liked 10 years later, it's very difficult to do a sequel, and Finding Dory told a really good story that I think complemented what we were asking for. So Finding Dory for me was, it turns out it was this year. It seems like forever ago. That was a great, great movie. But for me, I'm going to go with Moana. I know you guys did a pod on it. I really liked it. I think
I like Moana.
To not tell a story about a princess, to tell a story about a female lead. I think Disney did a great job actually in Star Wars too, this one, to show many more female rebels and more female leads. So very, very cool to have that story well told. Plus, I'm a big fan of pretty much anything that The Rock does.
Yeah, I'm voting for him for president.
Yeah.
If we're going to just elect anybody.
That's the thing. Well, if that's what we're doing, right? Like,
you know,
that's good. Yeah. If we're going to just elect anybody, you might as well be The Rock. Right.
And like Mick Foley as his vice president, we could, you know, the Rock and Sock connection, we could do that.
That sounds good.
There's another movie. It's a documentary on Steve Gleason. It's called Gleason. I highly recommend it. The former New Orleans Saints player that was diagnosed with ALS had that amazing punt block in the Monday night game back at the Superdome in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. Highly recommend you go seek that out if you haven't got a chance to see that. It's incredibly emotional. He's still alive today. Huge fan of Pearl Jam, and they are huge fans of his as well. So very cool documentary. I highly recommend it. Gleason.
Awesome. Cool.
So I gave way too many movies, so I guess I'll skip the book category. I am in the middle of finishing up grad school, so my reading is all about textbooks and not really for fun reading. TV is a little interesting. I've got three shows, none of which I've watched, but all of which I cannot wait to watch. The least of which is Mr. Robot. I heard season one was amazing. Season two has an incredible story to tell. And then The Americans with Kerry Russell.
I mean to get to that one too, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm... I listen to a bunch of other pods and have done, a lot of interviews and articles about them and how refreshing it is, how very cool it of a story it is and how captivating it can be. I'm looking forward to binging that. And then Atlanta with the guy from he was a former writer of SNL and he was in that show with Joel McHale on NBC. So
yeah, I hear that's really good.
Donald Glover Jr. or whatever. So very
Atlanta, it's called.
Yeah.
Never heard of it. It's interesting.
Yeah, very cool. I'll have to send you guys information on that. You can put a link in the pod description. And then for 2017, I am looking forward to the telling of probably America's last great story to tell, a movie in which we're all looking forward to, Fast and the Furious 8. I cannot wait. You know, I just saw the previews again tonight, like, and then I came home, and while I was supposed to be, like, prepping for this, I instead watched the same exact preview that I had just saw, like, three more times, just so I could see The Rock, like, break out of prison and beat the crap out of everybody but Jason Statham, only to then have to go after Vin Diesel. And apparently there's, like, real-life set drama between Vin Diesel and The Rock, and I can't wait to just, like, see that play out on screen. So I'm very
to learn the fate of the Furious.
Oh yeah, and I have a theory that one of the other guys that was like dead, and not Paul Walker, but like another one of the family died two movies ago. I believe he's still around. So I've got I'm holding out hope that he makes a comeback somewhere along the way. So
nice.
Yeah.
Is it strange that I've never actually seen one of those movies? I think just by the sheer odds, it's hard to have missed them at this point.
Is it strange that I went into a Suncoast Video the day before the DVD for the original Fast and the Furious came out and literally begged the store manager to sell me the DVD one day in advance? And he's like, no, we'll get a $400,000 fine if we sell it the day before. I was like, I'm willing to take that chance.
It's worth it. It's worth it. Right.
His name's Paul Walker. He's a police officer. And yet he sides with the street racers. This is amazing.
For those of you who don't know, a Suncoast Video used to rent out movies on physical discs.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, every so often I have that conversation in my head that's going to take us like 10 years from now, where I explain to my son how things used to actually be stuff you could hold.
Right.
And not just ideas that exist on a screen. It's going to be so weird.
Yeah. Well, for him, maybe.
Yeah, no, like...
He's going to look at you, like, sideways, and be like, Dad, I think you're crazy.
Yeah, I don't think
you had to drive to a store to watch a movie? It
doesn't make any sense. I mean, because even now, I sit there, and I just two nights ago, I was, you know, CJ's in bed upstairs sick, and Frank's asleep, and I'm like, I'm going to watch a movie. I can watch any movie I want to right now, anyone at all. I watched Iron Man 3, and it was pretty good. But I could just do that. And that used to be a chore years ago. You have to get in the car, put your shoes on, and then go and... No, not anymore.
Cool.
38 seconds. Anyway, is it everything?
I think so.
Excellent. All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening very much. If you haven't done so already, and you've had ample time at this point, you want to go to Twitter and follow us at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. On Instagram and at 3 Drinks In Podcast. We're on Facebook. We have an email address and a website. You can find those all by Googling 3 Drinks In Podcast. And we want to thank Jeremy for being here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yay. Yeah, thank you.
And anything else we want to say before we sign off for the conclusion of 2016?
Good luck next year. Hopefully it's better.
Yes, we hope that 2017 treats you well. As you ring in the new, I can't quite get it out today. As you ring in the new year, as always, please drink somewhat responsibly, and at least enough to have to go blind. That's sort of the idea. See straight, and we'll see you all next year.
Yeah, great. See you later.
All right, take care.
Thank you. Later.